From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And as of this morning, the Democratic National Convention is officially underway right here in our home state.
Are you fired up? Good morning, Illinois Democrats.
Governor J.B. Pritzker leading the scene this morning at the Royal Sonesta Hotel in downtown Chicago. Interestingly, that's right across the river from the Trump International Hotel and Tower, where Democrats were projecting taunts last night on the side of the building, like Project 2025 HQ and Trump Vance, weird as hell. Anyway, back to Pritzker this morning.
We are launching our candidates, our federal candidates for president and vice president, toward victory so that in just 78 days, we will get to say the two words that we've been waiting 248 years to say, Madam President!
The convention will see the nomination of Vice President Kamala Harris, who's only been campaigning for the presidency for less than a month. Harris's running mate is also new to national politics, though he's been getting a lot of love from Democrats as well.
And not to be forgotten, like a pairing of a great craft beer from Illinois with the tastiest Chicago hot dog, Kamala Harris chose my friend Tim Walz to be her running mate.
To preview what we might expect this week, on Friday, I called up Midwesterner and New York Times politics reporter Reed Epstein. He's been covering the Harris campaign, but he actually got his start in media in Central Illinois, delivering newspapers in Peoria. Was that the Journal Star, Reed?
The Journal Star, the morning paper.
Excellent. Welcome to back to the 21st Show. It's good to have you. Thanks for making the time.
It's great to be here.
So this convention comes after two of the wildest months in American politics that I can remember, that I've lived through, certainly, that we had the debate, Biden's intransigence, the shooting, Biden dropping out, Harris quickly seizing the nomination. How are you anticipating this convention to be different from previous Democratic conventions you've covered?
Well, it hasn't even, that's all in less than 2 months. It's like 6 or 7 weeks that's all that's happened. I think this convention week is going to be something of a coming out party for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Those of us who sort of live in Washington and follow politics know Harris and are getting to know Walz, but the truth is most of the country doesn't know very much about them. You've seen the initial advertising for Kamala Harris has really leaned into her biography as a local prosecutor and as the Attorney General of California, in part because those basic facts of her biography are just not known by wide swaths of voters, particularly people who the campaign thinks are gettable at this point. And so much of this next week at the convention is going to be about introducing them to voters, telling them over and over again the core tenets of their biography and policy agenda that Democrats want to get across. And I think after the last several weeks that we've lived through, which have, like you said, are been the craziest and most intense that I can remember, I think the convention will be, sorry about this phrasing, a little more conventional than what we have been through in the last several weeks.
So this will be the sort of the come down, if you will, of the intensity of that we've experienced. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and for several weeks, those of us that are trying to report on the story have woken up every day like not knowing what's going to happen that day. And every day has been sort of a surprise and a race to find out what's happening. And I think that the convention will not be like that. I think we're generally going to have a sense of each day what the core messages that Democrats want to get across are and who is speaking. And there will not be so much an effort to find out exactly what's happening or who's dropping out or who the vice president is going to be. Like all these things that have driven the news, I believe, knock on wood, are going to be behind us.
So I'm one of those weird people who consumes a tremendous amount of political news, both in the New York Times and the Post and a bunch of other papers. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And there was this idea, you mentioned that Harris and Walz are going to be sort of introducing themselves to the nation. I can't remember a time where the sort of inside politics world, the blob, whatever you want to call it, thought of a politician being one way, she bursts onto the national stage and seems to be having this entirely different persona that's developing. Can you talk about that, that sort of shift, or how are you seeing that?
Well, I think the point that you're saying is that Harris made a pretty lousy first impression on a lot of people who pay close attention to politics.
Yeah, and I can say what I've heard, like, oh, she ran a terrible campaign in 2020. She's going to have all this trouble with black voters because she was this tough on crime prosecutor, and then she went woke, go woke or go broke. I mean, take your pick of all these things that people have said about her. All of that seems to be inoperative or quickly being forgotten or buried or however you want to say it.
Well, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One, you're right, her 2020 campaign was abysmal. It was very bad. And then when she, after she and Joe Biden won in 2020, she was given a portfolio by him that was also not in her wheelhouse, and that she played a poor hand badly. And so that impression of her as the vice president has lived on in a lot of people's minds. And really, since the summer of 2022 and sort of most critically the Supreme Court decision on abortion, she has found her footing in a way that a lot of people missed because they were paying more attention to Biden. And, you know, frankly, not that many people care about what the vice president does on a regular basis anyway. But she was going around the country honing a stump speech and doing interviews with the press at a pretty significant pace that went largely under the radar. And so when this moment emerged that Joe Biden dropped out and she stepped forward, she, to a lot of people who knew her as either a lousy candidate or sort of a bumbling vice president trying to find the right answers on the border, they were surprised at how good she was and how good a performer she was. Now, she has, I should say, done no interviews with the press. She did one brief discussion with the traveling press pool that goes with her. And so we will see how she does when and if she submits to a sort of significant interview. But, you know, she has outperformed expectations in part because they were so low for her.
Yes, the classic presidential or vice presidential Washington interview that has to have the sound of some military aircraft blowing out the tape in the background. So I guess we will see what develops with that. Let me take a moment to remind listeners this is the 21st show, and we're talking with New York Times politics reporter Reed Epstein, who's been covering the Harris-Walz campaign. He's also originally from Peoria, Illinois, and we're talking about the Democratic Convention, which is beginning today in Chicago. Let's preview some of this week's events. I saw Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has a speaking slot Tuesday night, same night as Obama. Who else are people going to hear from this week?
Well, the main speakers are President Biden and some members of his family are speaking on Monday night. President Obama will speak on Tuesday night, Tim Walz on Wednesday night, and Kamala Harris on Thursday night. As we're speaking now, much of the details of the schedule have yet to be released, but you can expect prominent Democratic governors, senators like Bernie Sanders, and others will get speaking slots during the convention week. We're also going to hear a lot from sort of what people who are organizing the convention are calling sort of regular people, people who have been impacted by the Biden administration's policy agenda and have a story to tell about either having their student loans forgiven or receiving health care that they wouldn't have had before. And I think that how much of that is broadcast on television is a separate question, but there will be many of those sort of everyday Americans who can demonstrate the real life impact of the policies, both that the Biden administration has enacted over the last 4 years and that the Harris campaign proposes to continue and expand on going forward.
One of the other people that's also going to be giving an anticipated speech, of course, is Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. You had a story in the New York Times. You wrote, "I grew up in central Illinois and spent years living and working in Wisconsin. Hearing Walz speak reminds me of what it sounds like to hear another English speaker while traveling abroad, a familiar, comforting sound."
Case in point, this clip, which has been making the rounds on social media, it's from the governor and his daughter last fall talking about their food plans at the Minnesota State Fair.
"But then we're going to go get some food, corn dogs."
"I'm vegetarian."
"Turkey then?"
"And turkey's then, meat."
"Not in Minnesota, jerky special."
Why did Harris choose Governor Tim Walz?
You know, there, when she started this VP search, you know, these are things that usually take months and months. She had about 2 weeks, so it was a very compressed process. And she really looked hard at six people, and then did final interviews with just three, with Tim Walz, Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, and Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona. And what stood out to her and her team about Walz was, part of it was the balance that he brought to her, right? She is a Black and South Asian woman from San Francisco. He is quite famously a white guy from the Midwest. He grew up in Nebraska and has lived, represented Minnesota. And that difference, particularly in the states in the upper Midwest that will swing this election in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, was a compelling argument for him. A secondary point was, you know, frankly, he offered to do whatever she wanted. Josh Shapiro was considered to be the leader in this race up until the very end. But he had a lot of questions for her and her team about how the arrangement would work and how, what his responsibilities would be as vice president, how he would campaign. And so he wanted to know a lot of these things from them, where Walz went into his interview and said, "Anything you want, I will do." And I think that she and her team viewed that as a harbinger of how the relationship would work and kind of how, what he saw his role as the clear number two, as a supporting, playing a supporting role to help her get elected, but not someone who was going to try to insert himself in decision-making when he wasn't invited.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Is it kind of dangerous to phrase it this way? Like a stay-at-home vice president is what she was looking for?
I don't know that it's so much that, but if you look at Walz's history, you know, he was the defensive coordinator of the football team. So he was the top assistant coach. When he was in the Army National Guard, he was not the leader of the troops, but he was the number two person in that position as well. And so he...
And an enlisted man, not an officer, a high ranking enlisted man, but still, yeah, right.
He comes by this sort of supporting role, honestly, and it's something he's comfortable with in his life. And clearly, he's clearly a very ambitious politician based on sort of how he, you know, in our story, we talked about how he, going back more than a year, he had sort of envisioned the scenario unfolding. But he is someone who is quite comfortable, you know, as we saw in their initial rollout when they had events around the country, quite comfortable standing behind Kamala Harris as she speaks and clapping uproariously and cheering on the crowd. And not necessarily waiting behind her with a hook for his turn to speak.
Yeah, the classic sort of Ed McMahon or Andy Richter, I guess. Well, I'm dating myself with that reference.
Right.
But yeah. So, okay. Last thing I want to ask you about, we're coming to the end of our time together. Illinoisans have sort of have some, how do I say that? Let me rephrase that. In recent history, Illinoisans have been at the center of American politics, certainly during the Obama era. We came pretty close 4 years ago. Tammy Duckworth, our junior U.S. senator, was reportedly a very close finalist and lost to Harris to be President Biden's VP. One wonders, I've wondered how this year might be different if she had been the vice president this summer. J.B. Pritzker was talked about and certainly seemed to be putting himself forward as a potential running mate for Harris. What do we know about why he was passed over?
Well, he was one of the six who was got a pretty significant vet from the Harris campaign. He did Zoom interviews with her group of closest group of advisors that were discussing and vetting these candidates. But I think that it's harder to for the Harris campaign to portray Pritzker as kind of the everyman, salt of the earth person that the way they have presented Tim Walz, frankly, because Pritzker is, you know, the wealthiest elected official in America. He's a member of a family that's extremely wealthy, whereas Tim Walz grew up in a town of 400 people in Nebraska, worked as a school teacher, and has a net worth of about $300,000, money that J.B. Pritzker has lost in the cushions of his couches at home. And so I think that Pritzker is a significant figure in American politics at this point. There has been some discussion that he may be interested in a cabinet post in a Harris administration, but it always seemed like a stretch that she would select him to be on the ticket with her.
Well, certainly a lot to digest, and we will be paying attention this week. Reed Epstein, national political reporter with The New York Times. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on The 21st Show.
Thank you. It's always good to be here.
Coming up after the break, historian Heather Hendershot of Northwestern University on the parallels and differences between the Democratic National Conventions in Chicago this year and the historic one in 1968. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.